The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Welcome back to another UAB Director's Chair. We call it that show because the athletic director of the UAB Blazers. Go Blazers! This is Mark Ingram. He joins us every single week here on Tony Curry Radio, the TKR app. Make sure you download that bad boy. Thanks to tens of thousands of folks that have done that. Wherever you get your podcast, on Tony Curry Radio Podcast, the Tony Curry Radio Podcast, it's Curry with a K. You can listen to the show as many times as you want. We're available in every major industry. Mark, where are you right now, my friend?
Tony, how you doing, brother? I am in beautiful, exotic Frisco, Texas.
Yes. Let me ask you something about Frisco, Texas. First of all, why was Frisco picked to host Conference USA? How long will it be there? And how does that change if say, Birmingham wants to grab some of that or another Conference USA team, or now, of course, the AAC, which is what UAB is going to be going to next year? How do you get in the mix there?
Yeah, so, well, first of all, Frisco is a really nice place. Everything here is brand new. Yeah. I mean, everything is brand new, like it was built yesterday, brand new. And, you know, it ended up here because there was a group of Conference USA athletic directors that felt strongly that we, UAB, had a bit of an advantage hosting it in Birmingham. And we did win it once. We won the tournament once out of three times. We also got bounced in the first round one of those times. After a first round bye the year we had won the regular season. So I'm not sure that it was really a competitive advantage. It was super expensive and a ton of work for our staff to host it. So we weren't exactly upset when this group sort of got together and engineered it moving. And so they picked this place. Now I'm going to tell you, we are playing at what's called the Star. Mm-hmm. It is it's the practice facility for the Dallas Cowboys. Well, there's not anything that Jerry Jones does that's not, you know, first class or better. Absolutely, I mean, everything is super nice. You know, the building is nice. There's an Omni Hotel, which is where I am here. It's attached to the building. It's a beautiful hotel. Across the street is a retail district with restaurants and shops. It's very similar to Uptown. It's just bigger. There's more of that. So there's a lot of things to do just in walking distance, which is really nice. I think the worst part about it is the basketball, which is the most unfortunate part. And what I mean by that is you're playing in a practice facility for a football team. And now what they did was when the Cowboys designed this place, it has seating. It'll hold 10,000 fans for a football game. So there's some built-in seating and concourse space and you know, restrooms and concession stands. And all that is really, really nice. But they put a curtain up on the 50-yard line, and they, you know, you got two courts going with games on both sides of the curtain. You can hear the music and the bands and the horns and the whistles from both sides. And that's a little, it's kind of an AAU feel. And I don't like that for the tournament. You know, here you are at the most important time of the season, and you're playing, it's just an awkward kind of facility. And you've got at halftime, the players probably run, and I'm not exaggerating, depending on which locker room you're offered, 70 to 120 yards, you got to run from the court to your locker room.
Wow.
At halftime. So, you know, that's not ideal either, but everything else is fantastic. Everything else is really, really nice. And the American Conference, they're hosting their tournament in Fort Worth. So it's not far from here. It's a place called Dickey's Arena. Really, really nice place. They've got both the men's and the women's tournament happening there this week. So we'll be moving, but not far.
There you go. And best of luck in that tournament. When we're recording the show, of course, UAB getting ready to kick off their Conference USA tournament. I did want to ask you your whole thought on, I guess it was Merrimack that was not eligible to win their conference tournament because they're going to D1 level basketball. What's your whole thought process? And I think this is the second or third year in a row where a team has actually won its conference tournament, but is not allowed to go to the NCAA tournament. What's your thoughts on that?
If I'm following you, I think what it is their conference is not allowing that. Is that right?
I believe so. Yeah, they're going. Not only they're going to be moving, I guess, out of the conference. I get it if you're moving from one conference to the next, but still, you're
moving out and moving up.
Yeah, I mean, Fairleigh Dickinson actually won the tournament before the championship game because Merrimack was not able to win the tournament. I don't understand.
I think you're hurting the student athlete, right? Like, what are you trying to accomplish? You know, are you? If you're not allowing the teams to go, you're only hurting those kids who are not professionals, right? And what I mean by that is their eligibility gets exhausted. They don't get to just hang around as, you know, like a pro team, like pro athletes could, that if they're healthy, they get to play. Well, you get next year. Well, some of them won't get next year, you know? So I think sometimes we have rules in place that make sense when you adopt them. You're sitting around a conference table and they make sense at the time. But then when practically speaking, you have to apply those rules, sometimes they don't feel so good. And I don't know all the details around it. So if I'm understanding that right, I think that's the situation, but I could be wrong. But so that would be my question is, you know, you're really hurting the student athlete.
Mark Ingram is the UAB athletic director. You can find him on Twitter at @UAB_AD. A little bit later on here in this podcast, we'll be giving your Mount Rushmore of vocalist. These are not front men. These are actually just vocalists, our best singers. We were going to do classic rock, but it's kind of hard to not deviate away from that just a little bit, but I cannot wait to hear your four. And then next week we'll do our four best frontmen, front women of your favorite classic rock and roll bands. And of course, we'll take your ideas too. info@tonycurryradio.net, info@tonycurryradio.net. We get an email we'll get into here in a second. Some great numbers for the FBS and for the NCAA. Attendance records rose last year. The second biggest rise percentage-wise in the history of college football. Now, a lot of people are like, well, of course, we're coming through COVID. The numbers are going to go up. This is the first increase in 8 years since 2014. So this is something that's been falling off a lot recently. I know that, you know, when I first got to town in 1988, if I wanted to watch my favorite team, I may get to see them on TV three times a year. One of those games is a PPV that I had to pay for. Now you can pretty much see any team you want on any platform you want, wherever you are. And so a lot of people are saying, well, people aren't going to go to games anymore, where obviously they are. What are your thoughts on those numbers? And then I want you to kind of expound on the difference between watching a game, being there to watch a game, and then trying as an athletic director to create a fan experience for maybe not the diehard fan, but the peripheral fan to fill more seats.
Yeah, I think we all recognize, and the first part of that, which is why did we bounce back and we're starting to see the numbers trend back up? I think all of us realize that, let's call it, you know, 20, 25 years ago, if you wanted to watch a game, exactly what you just said, you'd see your favorite team a couple of times on television. And if you wanted to see your team play, you had to go to the game or you had to follow them to someone else's stadium to watch them play. And then as television evolved and more games began being broadcast, it made it easier to stay at home. So we all know this, and that. So you start trying to figure out, so how are we going to make people come to the game? I think stadium designs have improved. Mm-hmm. And so look at Protective Stadium, how you can walk all the way around that stadium on the concourse level, and you can watch the game, and you think, well, why does that matter? Well, because what has happened in fan behavior is it becomes a social event. Whereas when we were kids, it was just, hey, I just hope I have a ticket and I hope I'm in the stadium and I just want to get my hot dog and I want to get to my seat as soon as I can. And I just want to watch the game and I want to see the band march up and down the field. And I want to, you know, I want to see every bit about it. I want to see the flyover. I don't want to miss one second of anything. Well, now what's happened is as stadium design has changed, it's a social event. I can, you know, I could meet up with you at the game. You and I could stand on the concourse and talk, and me and you and Santos, we could talk for a little while, and the game's happening. You know, I'm not missing the game because I'm in a social environment because that where you and I can stand up, and maybe there's a like a protective, there's a drink rail at the top, and I can sit my drink down, and I can put mustard on my hot dog without it having to be in my lap. And I can, you know, and I'm not wedged in there with a bunch of other people. and you and I can just visit, and the game is happening, and I'm not missing the band, I'm not missing the flyover, I'm not missing those things. I'm in it, but I'm not in my seat necessarily. And so the other thing is notice and protective is this way too, how when I say you can walk all the way around and see the game, some places when you're in the concourse, you can't see the field. You have to walk through a, you know, what we call a vomitory, like a tunnel, to get out into the seating bowl. Well, the new design doesn't require that because concession stands and bathrooms are on the outside of the concourse, not the inside. So that allows you to do that. And it just makes the event different than it was. And it makes me want to be there because I think people say to themselves, you know, this is the place to be. I don't want to miss it. And then now we've layered in light shows. So notice how a lot of stadiums have gone to these light shows where when they score, you know, the lights, you know, whatever the team color is, you know, there it's flashing red and white and black and, you know, on and off and that kind of thing. And it's cool. And it's like being at a, you know, both of these concerts are great. James Taylor is going to walk out. Eric Clapton is going to walk out. He's going to sit on a stool and he's going to crush it for 2.5 hours. Mm-hmm. He's just going to sit there and just kill you with it, right? He's going to play guitar. He's going to sing and it's just going to be phenomenal. Kiss is going to have fireworks and fire and explosions. And their, you know, their staging is going to, you know, telescopic, you know, parts of the, you know, the guys are going to reach out over the crowd. And well, which is better, right? They're both great. They're, but you know, they do that because it's part of the show. It's part of what they're trying to demonstrate to you and me as a fan, like this is part of the fun. So I think we've all moved to that. We have more fireworks, we have more flyovers, we have, you know, light shows and things to create fan interest because it's not only the game anymore. If you want to fill your stadium, it's you got to create an event and then an environment where for some people, some number, however many it is, where it's a social gathering that people are having fun because it's where they want to be to see their friends, regardless of this. Oh, and a football game broke out.
You know? What are the rules? Are they conference mandated on when you can play music? I mentioned I went to a Memphis Grizzlies game the other night, and of course, my 18-year-old son was into it. I mean, because that's his audience, right? I'm 57 years old, and I just wanted to watch a great basketball game. And I enjoy the jocularity. I enjoy the fire, and I love the experience. I think it's great. And I think they do a wonderful job there. I think a lot of NBA teams do. But they were playing music during the entire game. There was no time during the game where there wasn't some type of thumping music going on. And right. I guess subconsciously it made it a better experience for me. But I was like, even when the offense had the ball, and I know during football games, the music is that mandated by the university? Is that a mandate from the conference? Can you play AC/DC when UAB has the football?
You cannot play once the ball is snapped, the music has to be off.
Okay. And that goes for bands too, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, you cannot play during the action. So if you come to our game, we play music between each play, which is not a lot of time, right? It's, You're talking about, you know, pass complete to number whoever, you know, Tony Curry, number 11, Tony Curry, you know, for another UAB first down, you know, and you've got that AC/DC or whatever that music is in the background, just for the same reason. You're just trying to keep the energy for the fan. You're trying to keep energy and momentum for your team. You know, that's all part of the experience. The NBA permits, and it's just because they're professionals, yet, like you said, there's music all the time happening during the game. Andy Kennedy and I tried to convince Conference USA to let us try that during COVID. We thought, let's do something since, you know, we've got to social distance everybody, and let's try to do something to create some energy because it was just such a dead environment for the players and, mm-hmm. and for the arenas that didn't allow any fans. Man, we would go, and I mean, it was like playing in a church or something. It was really, it was tough.
I will say this. Yeah. I will say this. And there are times during football and basketball games where obviously you have TV timeouts and things like that. And I thoroughly enjoyed listening to music. I love to hear great music, and I think you pick great music for football, I know you do dance music when the offense is out, and you do classic rock and in your face kind of stuff for the defense. But I really enjoyed when you had a disc jockey at a UAB basketball game last year. Just because I know it's going to be different. I'm going to hear some stuff that I don't normally hear, and yeah. I think it's super. He is Mark Ingram, the athletic director for the UAB Blazers. You can find him at UAB_AD when we record this show here on this Thursday. The Blazers are getting ready to start their Conference USA, their last one, Conference USA basketball tournament. They'll win and they get in to the big dance if they can win the whole shooting match, and they certainly have that shot. There's an interesting email here from Jim in Hoover, and I'll paraphrase here. Loves the show, listens every single week, of course, on the Tony Curry Radio podcast. Loves Mark Ingram and the UAB Blazers. What kind of economic impact does it have when a team makes March Madness? Do you get paid by the conference? Do you get a pool of money? And I don't think people realize, but March Madness is the cash cow in all of college sports, even more so than the bowl season and the CFP. And do you make more money the further you go? How does that work?
Yeah. So Jim, thank you for your question. Good old Jim and Hoover. It's interesting how this works. So we all get a payout. We all get a distribution from the NCAA, nationally, right? And it comes from this tournament. The CFP is not part of the NCAA. Yes. They are their own entity. So we also all get a college football playoff payout. And that again depends on, you know, are you in it? Is your conference represented in it? That kind of thing. That's one of the reasons why expanding to a 12-team playoff is so important. It really hasn't been a playoff. I mean, think about that. You got over 130 teams and only four make the playoff. That's not really a playoff. That's more like an invitational. And so I think this is good that we're expanding. So in the NCAA tournament, we have things we call units, and it's pretty confusing. But first of all, we all get a distribution. But if you have a team, if your conference has a team in the tournament, which is why having multiple teams is so, you know, coveted, you get one unit for every round you advance. And okay. So as you advance, you get more units. And then each conference determines how they use those units. Does the team that goes get a little bit more money because they made it? And usually the answer to that is yes.
Yeah.
Most conferences would do that. But that's how it is. And so the farther you advance, the more units you get. And so those unit payouts don't happen for like 3 or 4 years. So you don't actually get it immediately.
What? Why is it so long?
I have no idea. I would love to give you.
Wow.
I can make something up. You want me to make something up?
St. Peter's has got to wait 3 or 4 years to get a chunk of change?
A lot of math
last year.
Algorithm.
Yeah.
I really don't know.
Yeah.
But it does. That payout, I mean, there's usually in your distribution each year, you might. So like if we. This is complicated because we're leaving Conference USA and we're not getting a distribution as part of our exit penalty. But if that weren't the case, we would get a little bit more money this year for going. The conference would give us, it's more like a reimbursement for advancing, say, to round one or two or three and beyond. But the unit payouts are sort of paid out in years in the future.
What, was there any talk that UAB could not win the Conference USA tournament because you're leaving the conference?
No. If there was, we're not aware of it.
Yeah.
But there wasn't anything in our bylaws that said that they would prevent that. And I don't recall any conversation. Again, if there was one, we weren't a part of it.
Thanks to everyone who listens to the TKR, Tony Curry Radio. And, of course, you can hear this show on Tony Curry Radio. And, of course, wherever you get your podcast, we're on every major industry out there. Just pull up UAB Director's Chair, and you can hear Mark Ingram weekly here. And I greatly appreciate him. Very gratified that he joined us every single week. Well, you love classic rock. This is one of my favorite parts of this interview. We catch in every single week, and we discussed about doing it. It was actually your idea, the Mount Rushmore of, and we did something last week. This week we wanted to do the Mount Rushmore of vocalist, and I didn't want to set rules in place. I kind of want you to pick your four favorite vocalists. You were kind of saying, well, are these front men? We're going to do front men and women next week because I do think, and I'd say Robert Plant is one of those people that I don't think is a great vocalist, but I do think he's an incredible front man. And so we're doing our four favorite vocalists, and this on the heels of Rolling Stone coming out with their 200 best all-time vocalist Earlier in January, and of course, everyone had an issue with their list. Sometimes I think Rolling Stone emits certain certain voices just to get people talking about their articles and their mag. But I'm going to let you. I'll tell you what. You give me one, then I'll give you one. We'll go back and forth. How's that? Who's your first one?
Well, okay. So I think we both agree we're going to have to establish rules moving forward.
All right.
Because this was really hard. I just stuck with. First of all, I went classic rock only,
okay,
and I initially struggled with frontmen versus singer, you know, vocalists, and so like people like Celine Dion, who's a phenomenal vocalist, and mm-hmm. Whitney Houston, who's a phenomenal vocalist, and Adele, you know, people like I don't have because I was thinking of a particular category.
And for the record, I don't either, so I think we're good there.
Yeah, so I want to give you. I'd like to share some of my finalists.
Okay.
And what I struggled with, and I'd like to share with you my top four.
I love it.
So I'm going to give you some finalists before I give you my top four.
Okay.
Can we do that?
Yeah, absolutely.
And so I love this guy, God rest his soul. And I mentioned him on our show a couple of weeks ago. I love Kevin DeBrow, who was the lead singer of Quiet Riot. I do. I love he's got this really rough, I mean, he can scream with anybody.
Yeah, and, he can.
I just loved his sound, but he's not in my final. I struggled with him.
Mental Health is one of my favorite songs.
He can
absolutely get you. You've actually requested that song. We played it here on Tony Curry Radio.
And you'll hear it when you come to our game.
Go ahead and give me your honorable mentions, then I'll give you my honorable mentions. And we'll
okay,
not
you
want to
give you all
more.
My honorable
yeah,
mentions?
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
Okay, so the other thing I really struggled with is the difference between classic rock and metal. So, like Sebastian Bach from Skid Row is actually a great singer, mm-hmm. and he again can win any screaming contest. Ronnie James Dio, I thought was great.
Yeah, he was good. That's true.
Really good, just different, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so here's a great singer that falls into the metal category, and this may be the best vocalist of all of them. Is a guy named Jeff Tate. Do you know who that is?
I do not.
Oh, I'm glad I stumped you.
Yeah.
Jeff Tate from the band Queensryche.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Silent Lucidity, huh?
Listen, you listen to their two most popular songs, which are Silent Lucidity and Jet City Woman. You really hear his range. He really shows off his range in Silent Lucidity. He was trained, do you know he was a trained opera singer? That's how he got his start.
That would make sense.
Yeah, boy, and he's just really smooth. Okay, so I'm probably going to give away one of mine from if we're going to do frontmen next week. Let me tell you one that I kept out of my final four, Rod Stewart.
Yep.
Rod Stewart is a great singer and a great frontman. And if you listen to some of his early stuff, like Faces from the early 70s, then you start to realize like where did the Black Crowes get their sound? It almost sounds like the same group.
Yeah. No, I spot on. Do you have any others honorable mentions,
bro? I got five more.
Just rip through them real quick.
I'll rip through them. All right, Vince Neil, I love Mick Jagger. I love Bon Scott and Brian Johnson.
Mm.
Again, great. It's just unique sounds. Axl Rose, I love, who I think has more range than some people give him credit for. So those are my finalists, and along with David Lee Roth, who's not a great singer but a great frontman. So a little hint for next week. But
yeah,
those are my finalists, not my top four. What do you got?
My honorable mentions, and I got four of them. Would be Chris Robinson. You just mentioned the Black Crowes. Just an amazing guy. I've seen him sing probably four or five times. Brought him on stage. Not a particularly friendly guy, but can just belt it out with the best of them, and still doing that. Bob Seger. The last time I saw Bob, he is still hitting every single note. I have never heard Bob Seger hit an off note, and he sang everything from Main Street to old time rock and roll and Kathmandu. He can get after it. David Pack from Ambrosia. We used to play Holding On to Yesterday and The Biggest Part of Me on classic rock radio. The guy's falsetto could just hit some notes that if I could sing like one guy for one night, it would be David Pack. And one guy that I thought maybe you nail this, and the guy is still singing, Rick Emmett from Triumph. The guy can sing his you know what's off. I mean, it's just amazing that he can still. I saw a video of him singing Magic Power a couple of weeks ago, and I could not believe he's like 74 years old and he can still hit the notes. It's just an amazing thing. So those are my four guys.
Those are some deep cuts there, Tony.
Yeah. Well, you know, we play a lot of that stuff, and I love me some Triumph, but Rick Emmett, man, and just the fact that I just saw. Him sing a couple weeks ago. I was like, I wonder what Rick Emmett's up to. And of course, the band's not together, but he sings all their stuff. All right, give me your first Mount Rushmore of vocalist of all time for Mark Ingram.
All right, in no particular order.
Yeah.
And again, I went classic rock was where I was thinking, where my head was at. So this guy's sound is so great, and it's so different, and you never, ever would question who is this guy, and that's Ozzy Osbourne.
Yeah, there you go. That's another one of those. We could do most distinctive voices in rock and roll as one of our Rushmore.
Yeah.
But I'd have to agree. And he was on that list of top 200 from Rolling Stone. I'm going to go a guy who should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and he should be in there twice, not only for Bad Company, maybe even The Firm, but maybe even solo, but Paul Rogers. I think he's got one of the most distinctive voices. And every rock and roll guy, including Damon Johnson, who is now the lead guitarist for Lynyrd Skynyrd with the loss of Gary Rosin last week, I think Paul Rogers can just absolutely belt out anything. Yeah. He's so distinctive. He sounds good. Who's your number two?
And I think we disagree here on a couple of these. So I got Robert Plant. I love Robert Plant. Yeah. And if you listen to Immigrant Song, that one by itself, I think he shows a ton of range there. He's also a great front man. But I think Robert Plant is a great, great singer.
I'm going to throw you for a loop here. You may think I'm a little soft, but I still think Steve Perry is one of the greatest singers I ever had.
Oh,
in my generation.
Great choice.
Yeah, I mean, I know he's got to sing an octave lower now, but I mean, you just listen to Escape and you listen to, I mean, I know we hear Don't Stop Believing four times a day. But he is so crystal clear,
choice.
Yeah, his Foolish Heart and Oh Sherry. I got goosebumps talking about it. He's just got such a pure voice.
I am mad at myself for not having him on my list. That is a great choice.
All right, who's your number three?
Okay, have we done that many already? Okay, Steven Tyler.
Yeah,
Steven Tyler from Aerosmith. You know, again, a lot of range. I also appreciate the fact that people like him play instruments. Mm-hmm. You know, he can play the piano. He plays the harmonica. I respect that a lot. But I think he's got a ton of range and also a great stage presence.
That's awesome. A guy who also plays instruments, plays guitar very well, and also blows the harp. And I would doubt that anyone would ever have him on the Mount Rushmore. But every time I hear him sing, it is so on the money and it's so distinctive. I love John Fogerty. I mean, and listen, you hear Traveling Man, you hear some of the songs, those old CCR songs, and he's wailing. It's great. But go listen to some of his blues music, 101, The Shade, some of the stuff he did with the Blind Boys of Alabama. It is amazing. I mean, he could sing a lullaby and just knock it out of the park. I'm going John Fogerty. And then who is your last one?
Well, Fogerty's got a sound that you would never question who is that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So the last one, and I know that we talked about this one before the show, is Freddie Mercury. I think there's really not any song that Queen has that he doesn't like. Stephen Perry, he's got power. You know, real vocalist talent. He's not just screaming. He really. Has a lot of volume and a lot of depth and a really wide range. And I thought he was just a terrific, terrific singer.
No, and I think that's a slam dunk. And he was certainly on that top 200. And if you ask any rock and roller, I've asked Damon, I've asked Taylor Hicks, I've asked any guy that sings for a living, if you could have the voice of one guy for a night, every one of them says Freddie Mercury just because of his range. I just never realized it when he was alive. My last guy, and he's not really a classic rock guy, although he did do a cover of the Beatles' We Will Work It Out. It came out about 3 months after the Beatles released theirs back in 70, 71. But again, one of these guys that I grew up listening to, he was more into the R&B gospel type of stuff. He didn't dabble into classic rock just because he was black, and a lot of people they didn't have black classic rock artists. But Stevie Wonder, I mean, I can't hear Stevie Wonder whether it's Silver Bells, whether it's Ribbons in the Sky, whether it's Part-Time Lover, the guy can just hit it all. He hits every stinking note, and he's just never off. There's some people that are just never flat. And so yeah. I would have to put, although we're doing classic rockers, I'd have to put Stevie Wonder in the mix. And I'm just still trying to.
A million hits, yeah. Right? A million hits. I mean, yeah, look now, if you want to start, that would make it even more difficult. We're going to have rules. Because, like, I love the Motown sound and all that. I love all that. And
I'm just trying to figure out how they chisel that hair of Robert Plant and Mount Rushmore. That would take 5 years just to do his hair.
And his
hair is the same. And by the way, I got a chance to bring him on stage at Oak Mountain Amphitheater. He was on a scooter. He had a water bottle. He was using that water bottle to spray people in a phallic type of way. But one of the nicest guys, I got his autograph hanging on my wall. I'm looking at it right now, and one of the nicest guys in rock and roll. And the only time I got a chance to interview him was at that show, and he was actually exhausted. And I was like, "What are you so tired for?" Of course, Robert Plant's tired. Who knows? Because of the infamous shark story and everything else that came out of the Hammer of the Gods. But he's like, "I just got done playing tennis with Jimmy." He would play tennis with Jimmy Page, and I'm thinking, Robert Plant plays tennis. Who would have thunk it?
And Jimmy Page, yeah, that's hilarious.
Who would have thunk it?
I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to send you a picture before next week's show, and I have got a great story about Steven Tyler. And it's I love hearing that you said he's a really nice guy, because the ones who figure that out are the ones who really, really last.
Yep.
The ones who recognize that being good to your fans – one-on-one, even though you're never going to see them again, really matters. And that's why they stuck around as long as they did.
Great stuff, man. Next week, we'll do the Mount Rushmore of front men and or women. So make sure you listen to that. If you've got any ideas, you want to throw them to us, we'll read them on the show next week. info@tonycurryradio.net, info@tonycurryradio.net. If you're listening to this right now, you're probably doing the podcast thing. Tell your friends and family. And go Blazers! Good luck to the UAB Blazers basketball team. Let's win Conference USA our last year. It'd be a great way to go out, make March Madness, and I'll have my Muskies in and my Blazers. I'll be a happy, happy boy. I appreciate you, Mark.
Yeah, man. Thanks so much. Have a great week.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.